This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 142. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So the hubbub in the background you can hear this week is coming from the end of the line with Garraz. You're in Loughborough this week, Mark, is that right?
I am. I seem to be spending a little bit, but up there assisting with the recruitment for a new head coach for the MCCU there, the University Cricket Programme. As a lot of people and a lot of the listeners will know that, unfortunately and very sadly, Graham Dilley passed away recently, and we're having the task of finding somebody to come in and fill his very big boots. He'd created a very good environment up at Loughborough. He's incredibly well respected, and so there's somebody going to be coming in some stage in the first part of take over the mantle.
Yeah, big boots to fill. And Berners, you're here as well. You had a dabble in university cricket when you were a whippersnapper, didn't you?
I did indeed. I was involved with Cardiff, actually, and Kevin Lyons down there, which was a little bit of a rude awakening in my first year as a fresher. Whilst other teenagers partied the night away, I was often tucked up in bed awaiting a nice 10-mile run at about 6 a.m. through the streets of Concord up in Uick in the upper depths of Cardiff, which was it was an exciting time, actually, but learned a lot about cricket and learned a lot about staying in early and not drinking.
Which you have not kept up since.
Yeah, it was actually quite amusing. I did a body balance course once as part of that programme, and I thought I was stood there on top of this kind of Reebok step thing whilst I had some woman, lycra clad, telling me that my body balance was awful and that I needed to hunch down and do some squats. And I thought, what's life come to? You stood here, dear oh dear. How things have changed.
But it's quite an exciting programme, the MCCU programme, isn't it, Mark? It's a real breeding ground for first class cricketers.
Well, it is, and also over the years, I think it's developed significantly. And you look at the Cardiff that Berners was at. You know, they've dominated a lot of the university stuff of late, and yet initially, in the first few years, they were the whipping boys of it. And a lot of credit has to go down to Kevin Lyons, who's put his principles across and done fantastically well, and also he's benefited from having access to the fantastic facilities now that down at Sapphire Gardens. But there's a lot of cricketers, and when I was over in Ireland, we had three or four of our cricketers over in the programme, and it definitely benefited them with that first-class experience that you pick up at the first bit of the season when you're playing against the counties, and then the very competitive university programme that they have in between each of the MCCUs.
So there'll be youngsters listening to this who'll think to themselves, oh, you know, I fancy finding out a little bit more about that programme. Would it be something that influences someone to go to a particular MCC university, you think, if they think to themselves, you know, I fancy my chances of getting it into the first class game?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's six MCCUs spread around the country, England and also in Wales as well. They all offer different courses, obviously, because Loughborough will have its own specialisms, whereas Cardiff will have its, and the same with Leeds Met, with Oxford and Cambridge and Durham as well. So I'd encourage anybody that was interested in doing the degree courses and also having a balance with their cricket as well, which is why it was put in place to start off with, to have a look on the MCC website, click on the MCCU programme and have a little look at it. It's definitely benefited a number of cricketers that I've been fortunate enough to be involved with over the years, and my experience in the last couple of days up at Loughborough has only sort of fueled that belief that it's a good system.
And the fact that it's such a thorough selection process for the head coach says something in itself, doesn't it, really? You know, it's you know, the fact that you're putting people through their paces. You're not just picking up someone just because they played a couple of games for England or whatever.
No, exactly right, and that really goes back to the standards that Dill put in building the program and what he gave to the program as well. You know, it was only right that we've gone about it in an appropriate fashion, and it's a process that will probably take a number of weeks to get the right person in place, because it's that important.
One of the other things I noticed that was going on this week was that the Australians are struggling a bit with their batting in recent tests, and they decided to come up with a 2-day batting camp for some of their batsmen to help them deal with swing bowling. But my first thought was, can actually anything be done in 2 days with batsmen who are highly experienced like Ricky Ponting and Michael Hussey? Is there anything that can be done in that, or is it a PR exercise, do you think?
If I didn't know the personnel involved, I'd suggest that it was a PR exercise, but I do, and I know that Mickey Arthur is very thorough and has done a lot of research on the Indians. He's also aware that his big mate Duncan Fletcher's coming to town with the Indians as well, and one of their strengths will be the swinging ball. And I mean, it's no secret that Australia, when the ball has moved laterally, have struggled over the years. You only have to look back to 2005, when the ball moved laterally in reverse fashion for England, and they struggled. But they're not immune to it, because any team, when the ball moves laterally, is going to be put under pressure.
Oh yeah.
So what I liked about Mickey's statements that he's made this week is not just being that they're going to have a batting camp, but actually that they're going to be very specific in the way that they go about it. So they've targeted Ishant Sharma, they've targeted Zahir Khan, who's coming back from injury, and they'll probably look to replicate through their Hawkeye analysis and through bowling machines being set up and trying to recreate the angles and the conditions that they're going to be facing in matches. So if it wasn't as specific as that, then yeah, it could be looked at as a bit of a PR exercise and just to keep people happy. But the other thing to consider as well is that half the team are going to be playing in that. I think it's a chairman's 11. Mm. So they're actually going to be playing against India. And this is for the guys that aren't in that team. So, you know, the workloads will be very similar. But it's that specificity that's massively important when you go into those scenarios. England used to do exactly the same. If we ever played Malinga, then we used to get the cut-off bowling machine out and make sure it was positioned in the right place to simulate exactly what he was going to bowl. And, you know, so it's no different from that. And as long as you're specific, it's a worthwhile exercise.
I think you've got added to the mix as well. A lot of them are going to be playing in a big bash game, which is kicking off in between. And they're actually going to play in that before the series and either before or after this training camp. So that's going to totally mess with their mental side if they're having to switch codes. You know, in between, I'd imagine that's not really ideal for someone's thinking that's trying to engage them in this swing bowling kind of context.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you're also talking about people that are used to that as well. You know, and it's not ideal because, ideally you'd be on tour and you have a preparation. But they're at home. They've got their domestic competition around them. And you know, you're talking about Hussies and Pontings and people like that. And if there are any players that can make that adjustment mentally, and adapt their games accordingly, then it will be those guys.
So if you were running the 2-day camp, which was focused on dealing with the specific Indian bowlers, what would you, Mark, be trying to get out of it in 2 days? Because 2 days isn't very long to work on something, is it? I mean, you know, there's only a certain amount you can get out of it in 2 days, especially with guys where you don't want to be making technical changes or anything like that. So what would you be looking to have at the end of it?
Yeah, you won't be looking to do any technical interventions as such. You'd be looking to work on game plans. So in the same way as, you know, they might look to leave Zahir Khan, as Hussey, for example, might look to leave him as much as possible and practice that, get to know where his off stump is from the angles that Zahir Khan bowls from. They might talk about how they look to take on Ishant Sharma's short ball, which was one of the highlights, I think, of the England series over here, was he went to his short ball a bit more often against Kevin Peterson, for example, and had some success about that. So it's all about approaches, and ultimately you do work a technique with these types of guys, these top flight players, but a lot of it is about how they approach facing a bowler, and that will be the main emphasis. And obviously the simulation of bowling machines and conditions and what have you will only make that more marked.
So would you have a goal, like, would you have kind of a set goal at the end of it, i.e. at the end of it, you know, Ricky Ponting will know exactly what he's going to be doing against bowlers A, B and C. Would it be that detailed?
Yeah, it's got to, absolutely. It's got to be the clarity. So you go into it and you have a, you know, you practice against it and then you come out of it with a clarity of how you're going to approach. And then obviously that plan will adapt because, you know, you'll get different conditions at the different venues that they're playing at. They're playing at the MCG, I think, to start off with. And that's very much a different pitch to what you'll face in other areas of Australia, purely because it's a drop-in pitch. So, you know, they'll adapt from that plan, but they'll have an idea in their head of how they're going to play each bowler. And if they're clear at the end of it, then it's a fantastic two-day camp.
Time now for the ever popular questions section on the show, and of course, as you already know, if your question is read out and it's the best question of the week, then not only do you get the answer to your question, but you also win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Verners, you have the questions this week. What have we got?
Indeed, we got a first question here from Raza, who's a fast bowler, and he's just inquiring as to what he should do on a fitness side of things. So he's asking, much like running and other gym activities, what can he do to help enable him to bowl faster balls? So in terms of maybe running, how many kilometres, or in terms of shoulder power, how many kind of bench presses should he do to help enable him to do this? So quite an interesting discussion. But yeah, that's his point.
Yeah, well, I think probably it's a question which is a two-part question, which fits quite nicely between Mark and I, because the ultimate goal is that he wants to get over that, you know, magic sort of 150 kilometre an hour mark, which is a very rare thing. And he's thinking about doing it from a fitness point of view. So I think fitness-wise, there are a lot of things you can do, because you do need to have a certain amount of strength and power to be able to generate enough force into the ball to be able to bowl very, very quickly. And so, yes, you should be looking at what you're doing in the gym and what kind of strength and power exercises that you're doing, because it will improve your basic genetic ability to generate force. The problem is, it's very difficult to give specific answers, because some people, they're naturally very whippy, very quick people anyway. They've got a lot of fast twitch muscle fibers. They probably would benefit more from a more strength based training to bring up that side of it, because power is just strength times speed. And then there are other people who maybe are stronger, you know, they've got the brute force, but they haven't quite got the speed side of it, and so they would benefit from a more speed based type of training. So it's a little bit difficult to give a specific prescription, but generally speaking, you should be looking at improving your strength and improving your speed, because if you do those exercises in the gym, then you're going to be able to generate more force to put into the ball to get it down to the other end more quickly.
I agree with that, David, but you know, we've got the base for it. So what you've talked about there is refining the body to maximise the technical elements and the biomechanical elements that sit beneath it. And to me, you look at the fast bowlers, because there aren't many that get it over 150 k's. You know, 150 k's is in excess of 90 miles an hour. And because of the intensity of the cricket that they play and the volume of cricket they play, there's very few that can actually propel the ball at that level. So the first thing I'd say is, you know, don't let 150 be the holy grail and get demotivated by not achieving that, because very, very few manage to do it. So that's the first point in terms of managing expectation. But the second bit is, if you look at most of the guys that bowl at 150 k's or have the capacity to, they've got wide bases. Okay, so they're able to get their feet spread apart, wide bases. And as a general rule, if you look at the way that their body absorbs the impact of the ground, they'll have a fairly braced leg, front leg, to work off of. As soon as that front leg starts to work and bend and brace, then the energy is being lost and can't be transferred up the body, because all power and all momentum goes from the ground up. So when you go back to your physical exercises you talked about, massive amount of squats, massive amount of leg strengthening exercises will increase the efficiency of getting the energy from the ground going up through the body, because if you haven't got it in your legs, then you're not going to be able to transfer it up the body. A baseball thrower, is another a power athlete, and they spend 65% of their time training their lower half, not their top half, in order to be able to generate the pace into that ball to go towards that batter who's waiting to try and slug you for a home run. So the same sort of thing applies from a fast bowling perspective. The other thing you want, so you've got that wide base, you want to be able to have dynamic hips, to square those hips up, and in order to then stabilise your hips to then transfer the momentum up the body into the upper body limbs and the ball ultimately. So I would go massive leg strength. I would look to widen my base at delivery, and I'd alter the amount of flex I have when I land out of my bound into my delivery stride as well, because that will make your efficiency in transferring momentum up the body better. But as you say, you know, without seeing somebody, but as a general rule, you look at the likes of Brett Lee and Wacky R. Yunus and Wazzy McGram and these guys that have generated serious pace in the past. They've got wide bases, stabilise on their base, and there's not too much dip and energy momentum up from that base effectively into the ball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, technique is absolutely crucial. The two combined are crucial. And some people are lucky, you know, to have naturally good strength levels, and they don't need to do so much in the gym. And others, they need to do a little bit more to do what they can. But yes, the lower body advice particularly good. There's lots of different variations of squats, and of course deadlifting, which is the other pattern that not only lifting the weight as in a squat pattern, but lifting it in a deadlift pattern, which is pulling the weight off of the ground rather than having the weight, you know, on your back or whatever. So there's lots of variations that you can do, and hopefully some of those will help you out.
The great thing about the deadlift as well is that you end up firing your hips. That's the whole part of, mm-hmm. is that you fire your hips there, which is, although there's no rotation in it, to get used to firing your hips is massively important in fast bowling. Because if you need, to square those hips up as quickly as possible, and the deadlift helps you to generate pace through the hip flexors as well as through the legs to get those hips moving forward in the right direction.
It does it. It also gives you a powerful upper back as well, which is a very important element in fast bowling. So the deadlift is an excellent exercise, and you can even get rotational versions of it. There's a version of it called the suitcase deadlift, where you have more weight on one side than the other. And if you do that, then that brings in a bit more rotation into the core training. So there's lots and lots of things you can do in the gym, but don't forget about technique either. And also, don't give up if you can't get up to 90 miles an hour, 150 kilometers an hour, whatever it is, because not many people can. But what you can do is improve from wherever you are.
My next question is from Adash. And he has just got in contact regarding his height more than anything. And he's saying that he's a medium pacer, but he's having problems with actually getting a stock delivery. So he's saying that he's never going to really blast batsmen out at any reasonable level. He often draws inspiration from shorter seamers such as Malcolm Marshall and Danny Morrison. I doubt he draws inspiration from Danny Morrison's batting. But he was just wondering if we had an opinion on height and pace bowling, and if he should potentially shift codes to become an off spinner, which you know, is worth consideration, I guess.
I don't think that that height alone should be a restriction for someone who wants to bowl quickly. There are, as in the question, there are plenty of examples of very quick bowlers who are not 6'5". So, you know, you don't necessarily need to be super tall to be a quick bowler, but you do need something. You do need something which is going to get the batsman out, whether you seam the ball around, whether you swing it in the air, whether it's, you know, you're bowling at a super high speed. Whatever it is, I think you need something. So if you haven't got something, and you're sort of in the ranks of the military medium bowler who just pops the ball on the spot, then you're going to be limited to how far you can progress. But if you're a spinner, then, and you can give the ball a rip, then you've got so much more at your disposal. Not only have you got turn, but you've got flight, and you've got dip, and you've got drift, and you've got all kinds of things which you can't necessarily get if you're bowling military medium seam up. So I think my advice would be, don't worry necessarily about the height thing, but do consider turning to off-spin purely because it gives you a lot more options than it would staying as a as just another medium pacer who doesn't stand out at all.
Yeah, I mean, unless you can master those skills that you talk about, David, you know, with the lateral, and it sounds as if the bowler's struggling to do that at the moment, then turning to spin is another option. And you can do it in many ways. And some great examples from the English game. Mike Watkinson, who was a seamer and a very good seamer, played one day internationals as a seamer, all-rounder for England, and then bowled off-spin in test matches and towards the end of his career. You know, showed that adaptation. And you don't necessarily have to just go 100% in one direction, particularly at the club level. You know, you could bowl some seamers, and then you could bowl some spin. That's not unheard of at all. And another one being Mike Yardy, who started off as a left-arm seam bowler, who turned into a left-arm spinner and played, you know, a number of ODI matches, and is obviously hoping to get back into the fold as well. So there's some really good examples of people that have made that change fairly late in their careers and done pretty well. But to me, it's about options. It's about, can I get my name on that team sheet? Can I get to do something slightly different that gives me the ball, or so I get to bowl more overs? And can I impact upon a game of cricket? And if your medium pace bowling isn't impacting on the game of cricket, and you believe that by practicing some off spin or some different types of spin enables you to do that, then I would say for your overall enjoyment in the game and your overall progression, then give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the being that seam bowler, that accurate seam bowler who doesn't go for many. You know, maybe you would enjoy that. You know, if you know you're going to get your 10 overs on a Saturday afternoon, and you'll get a wicket or two, and you'll be economical, then that's great. You'd have to be a bit braver to be a spin bowler, I think. But if you can do that, I think it gives more options for someone who hasn't really got anything going for them apart from accuracy if they're bowling medium pace.
I mean, the question itself actually comes to us, you know, to ask the question must be the player must be saying to himself, well, I'm not particularly happy doing the role that I'm doing, and I'd like to have a more enhanced one. And if you're asking the question, there's generally a good reason behind it, and there's generally a need or a desire to look at towards the spin so they can play a bigger part in the game.
You've bowled a bit of both, haven't you, Berners? What do you think?
I think do what you can do best. I bowl a slow left arm orthodox. Never really decided whether I should go through the umpire or run up straight. That's probably a discussion for another day. But got told many a different words of wisdom from many a different coach, and kind of got confused in the end. Got the yips and started bowling some left arm over Alan Mullally's, which were really, really good fun. So
swing it.
I just found that I could control it a little bit more bowling with a little bit of a more weighted ball and having a longer run up. I could just get better control, and actually bowling left arm over, I just managed to move it away to the right hander as well a little bit. So it was something in club cricket that I could often find myself bowling a little 5-10 over spell at times, which I quite enjoyed.
And that's where it comes down to, Bern, is what you've given there is a great example, in that your left arm seam is where it's going away from the from a right-handed batter, enables you to have more of an impact in the game of cricket. And the question sounds to me is if the bowler's looking to get more of an impact in the game of cricket. So give it a go. Give spin a go, because that might be the way that you get more of a go on a Saturday.
Yep, definitely.
But also, if you do give it a go, don't give up too easily, because it can be difficult when you first start bowling spin. If some blacksmith starts to put you into the crowd, then you might think, well, I'm going back to seam. But,
absolutely. You'd start in the nets. You'd start by messing around and just seeing what you can and can't do. I mean, never take it into a game and try things for the first time there, because, yeah, if it goes wrong, you'll probably never return.
Yeah. Soapbox time on the show now. And every week, somebody from the show, or perhaps even yourself as a listener, gives us their 60-second rant on whatever subject they like. So, Berners, this week, It's over to you. What have we got for the soapbox?
You come to a new club and straight away you go to a pre-season net training. They ask you what you do. You describe yourself as an opening batsman. All of your career, all of your lifetime then at that club, you're set in that kind of framework. So no matter what you do, if you're deemed an opening batsman, you're opening the batting. If you ask to bat at number three or four, it's, oh, no, you're too slow. And whatever happens, you're opening the batting. If not, you're seen as a dimwit. And also on the other side of that, I've got a real kind of pet hate with this whole bowling side of things. I can count numerous times I've been in the nets and I've bowled really good sets at some of the leading players at the club and in pre-season friendlies and midweek evening cricket when they chuck you the ball. Come league day, Saturday, you're about as close to the flipping bowling crease as you are Jupiter. I'm down at fine leg. I'm screaming out for the ball, but no. Burners, you're a batsman, mate. You leave the bowling to us guys.
Wow. You've been waiting years to say those things, haven't you, Bernie?
I have.
So we're drawing to a close for another week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. But before we leave, as is traditional, we're going to pick a winner of the competition, which is, of course, a prize of a online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy, courtesy of pitchvision.com. So the two questions that were sent in this week, I think we gave quite comprehensive answers, which is prize enough in itself. But just as a little bonus, we've got Raz's question on bowling at 150 kilometres an hour and fitness. And Arnash's question about pace versus spin. So, Gareth, which one do you think is the best one this week?
I'm going to go for Raz's question. The holy grail of 150Ks or just over 90 miles an hour. It's always a good question. And hopefully with our answer, we've given him a bit of a combined version of how to get there rather than just looking at the fitness angle.
Absolutely. And if you want to send in your questions to the show, you can do. We're still accepting questions. And the way to get in touch, Berners has. So what is that, Berners?
You can give us a call on 02088167691 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
You can indeed. And there's a myriad other ways to get in touch. We have a page on Facebook. It's called Pitch Vision Academy. Do a search for that in Facebook and you'll find us tucked away in there chatting about various things. Our Twitter account is busy as well. It's PV Cricket Coach. You can send questions through there. You can also subscribe to the show through iTunes. It's a free download. And if you head over to iTunes and search for Pitch Vision Academy, all the details of how to do that within iTunes are there. And if you don't use iTunes, you can head over to pitchvision.com, find the podcast section, and you can have the feed plugged into whatever podcast catching program you like. So that's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, Coach.
Cheers, Coach.
Let's wrap it up, shall we?
You've got to have a two-drop policy with slip fielders. You drop two catches, it doesn't matter. You never field in the slips again. If I was the captain, you never field there again. Someone else in. Someone else to have a go.
Cool. There'd be a few good slip fielders that wouldn't end up in the slips too often, mate.
Well, I mean, two on the trot. I'm figuring he's no good. If he takes a worldie first up, then I might give him benefit of doubt. But if he drops two straight off the cuff, he can do me a little mid-on, just slightly wide.
Slightly wide.